Chapter 3. Thousands of waterways connected the cities of Reino del Sol. Wide rivers allowed for large cargo and transport ships to ferry goods and people between communities, while smaller canals provided local drainage, irrigation, and water supply. Even with access to cars and public transport, boat travel was still the only way to reach Sol Temple. The Quetzalan entourage of Teo and the priests was small enough to fit in only one trajinera, a flat-bottomed boat about 25 feet long and 6 feet wide. It was made of wood and painted with intricate designs in Quetzalan's distinctive, vibrant colors, with a curved roof that would protect them from the blistering sun and errant downpours as they traveled through the microclimates of Reino del Sol. A priest in the back of the boat pushed against the eroded slate bottoms of Quetzalan's canals with a long pole. Since Quetzalan was located on the western edge of Sol, their journey inland along the Rio Agua cut through other jade cities. Save for some of Quetzalan's neighbors, Teo had seen little of Reino del Sol. For years, he had only caught glimpses in this pilgrimage to the sun god's island. There was Maislan, with its meticulous patchwork quilt of farms and orchards. The Maislan temple towered in the distance, dark vines dotted with crimson tomatoes and chili peppers of all shapes and sizes glinted like jewels. They went through Medicali next, with its tall glass buildings, where Diosa Medica's temples served as a teaching hospital. The only gold city they crossed was the lavish Puerto Cascadas. The canals were wide and filled with large boats and watermills that were used as renewable energy sources. Diosa Agua's temple, difficult to glimpse among the shiny glass skyscrapers, was made of slick stone covered in moss, with waterfalls cascading down every side. The waterway opened up, and dozens of trajineras spread out before them in the massive lake set in the heart of Reino del Sol. Crowds gathered on white, cable-stayed bridges that looked downright futuristic compared to the stone arches they had in Quetzalan. Cheers swelled as each patron's children passed by, dipping significantly when the tiny Quetzal trajinera followed suit. Sol Temple was on an island in the lake, surrounded by an unnatural ring of jagged mountains that acted as a wall. The highest point in all of Sol, the temple was easily 3 times the size of Quetzalan's and made entirely of gold. The Sol stone was housed in the open-air observatory at the top, giving off a powerful ray of light. Their progress slowed as trajineras crowded together, lining up at one of the many waterfalls cascading down the mountains. "Any chance I can fake sick and skip the opening ceremony?" Teo asked, dread sinking into his stomach as the mountains towered before them. Huemac considered Teo for a moment, just long enough for him to get his hopes up. What he didn't expect him to say was, "Nia will be fine, Teo. You don't have to worry about her." Teo blinked. Was Huemac a mind reader now? Each gold semi-diose had a specialization of their godly parents' powers that they harnessed while training at the academy. As the semi-diosa of the earth god, Nia could manipulate metal and rock with nothing more than a thought. She was also obscenely strong, even by gold standards. "I'm not worried about her," he lied, quickly trying to recover. Huemac looked like he didn't believe him, but at least had the decency not to say it.
"No, you cannot skip the ceremony."
Teo huffed, blowing his drooping circlet higher on his forehead. "Worth a shot." Finally, it was their turn. Even though he'd gone through the enchanted barrier to Sol Temple hundreds of times before, it still took his breath away. Right before the front of the boat was doused, the thunderous waterfall slowly split open just wide enough for them to pass through. When he was little, Teo liked to shout and hear his voice echo, but he hadn't done that since a particularly messy bat incident after which Huemac grounded him for a week. Once they made it through, the island came into full view. Sol Temple was ancient, never having been renovated or industrialized like the outside cities, but still pristine. The Golden Temple was covered in intricate carvings of the sun, planets, and various constellations. When it was time to disembark, the priests in their clean white robes, embroidered with the sun glyph of Sol, came on board to help them unload and to take their things to their housing for the night. They filed down the main road, merging with the large crowd. As Teo craned his head in search of Nia, Huemac kept catching his cape and dragging him back in line. More priests greeted them as they approached the courtyard. Through the doors of the temple, a grand staircase led down into the main hall. A large statue stood in the center. A huge golden sun with constellations etched into its smooth surface. Crowds of semi-dioses and temple priests gathered around standing tables, a sea of colorful robes and outfits. Laughter, music, and the smell of food floated through the air. As people milled around chatting, Dios Mariachi's children performed at the base of the steps. Half were dressed in black suits and matching wide-brimmed hats, stomping their boots in heavy, percussive steps. The other half danced and waved their ruffled skirts like colorful trompos spinning in circles. Small flashes of lightning danced in Dios Tormentoso's curly gray hair and beard as he laughed at something Dios Mariachi said. Surrounded by jades and golds, Teo felt like he'd been shoved in a cage. Jade semidioses were sequestered in their own cities and didn't mingle much. Without Nia, the humiliating truth was that Teo didn't have any other friends to search out, so he stuck to Huemac's side. Meanwhile, it was like the golds were all in a secret club, flocking to one another in packs. Nia had told him how the highest-ranked gold semidioses were their own clique, never associating with the lower-ranked students. Even now, Teo watched Shochi, the daughter of Primavera, and Atsi, the daughter of Tormentoso, pass by, laughing with their arms linked. Both wore exquisite dresses. Shochi's black off-the-shoulder outfit had rows of flounces made entirely of real flowers, while Atsi's light blue ensemble featured a high collar and ruffled skirt trimmed with silver ribbons that formed a star around her hips when she spread the hem apart. Her box braids were adorned with silver string, gold cuffs, and tiny seeds that mimicked the sound of falling rain when she moved. Everyone seemed to have their own social circles and hierarchies, and Teo was squarely outside of them. Well, almost. Suddenly, the scent of sweet apples, copal incense, and must tickled Teo's nose. It was subtle enough that the average person probably wouldn't have noticed, but Teo had been expecting it. He turned and it took a moment to spot the figure, dressed in black, waiting in the shadows.
Fantasma, he said with a wide smile.
The diosa looked like a young girl, maybe a couple of years younger than Teo. Though age, of course, meant nothing to a god. As she stepped closer, light sparkled in the golden embroidered stars and suns on her robes and lace mantle. Her butterfly companions rested on her clothes like tawny orange brooches. One sat at her temple, holding back her dark, wavy hair and showing off the bright marigold blooms that hung from her ears. Fantasma was a jade goddess who served Muerte, the gold goddess of death. Muerte's power was second only to that of Sol, two sides of the same coin, the giver of life and the taker. While Muerte was the harbinger of death, Fantasma was the gentle caretaker of the dead. As Teo approached, the petite goddess lifted a hand in greeting with a hesitant smile.
I've got something for you, Teo said, digging his hand into the tight pocket of his pants.
Fantasma's eyebrows lifted, and she leaned forward. Teo pulled out a strawberry cream chupa chup.
It's your favorite!
A wide smile brightened the goddess's face. Her cold fingers brushed against Teo's as she took the lollipop,
and gently cradled it in her hands like it was a tiny bird. Her gray eyes, the color of stone after rain, drank in the pink and white wrapper. Teo grinned. Even though he could never get Fantasma to laugh, he was proud of the many smiles he'd collected. When Teo was little, he'd found Fantasma sitting at the base of the sun statue in the Sol Temple courtyard. Thinking she was lonely and in need of a friend, Teo had given Fantasma a Shupa Shoop he had in his pocket. She looked a little confused, but smiled and accepted his offering. In return, a skeleton hand popped out from the ground between them, which admittedly should have been terrifying, but held between its bony fingers was the most perfectly round and vibrant marigold Teo had ever laid eyes on. The two had fallen into a ritual of gift-giving ever since. While Teo always gave Fantasma a Shupa Shoop, Fantasma's gifts were more of a surprise. A skeletal hand popped right through the stone floor, presenting Teo with a mouse skull. Teo took the tiny skull and smiled. "Thanks," he said, now left with the problem of figuring out where to put it. "There you are!" Teo heard his mom's happy, sing-song voice a second before she swept him into a hug as if she hadn't seen him a few hours ago. "And Fantasma," Quetzal added with a warm smile. Fantasma meekly waved, the Shupa Shoop in the iron grip of her free hand. Teo was about to ask his mom if she'd seen Nia yet when his ears began to ring. At the same time, the palm of his left hand started to itch, which only meant one thing. "Teo and Quetzal, two of my favorite people," came the booming voice of Dios Mala Suerte. Teo immediately bit his tongue and stuffed his hand into his pocket to stave off any bad luck before forcing a smile. He knew better than to go against the old superstitions in the presence of Mala Suerte. Priests and semidioses alike quickly stepped out of the jade god's way, muttering prayers under their breath. Tall and thin as a rail, the god of bad luck wore black slacks and a matching guayabera with round eyes stitched in purple thread running down either side. His hair was oily black and always slicked back out of his face. Teo thought his grin showed too many teeth and never seemed to reach his eyes, but the really unsettling part of his ensemble was the strings of teeth he wore about his neck and wrists.
"Always so good to see you, and how tall you've gotten," Dios Mala Suerte chuckled, thumping the back of Teo's shoulder. "They must be feeding you well in Quetzalan. And you look so much like your beautiful mother."
Teo did his best to smile, tongue still pressed between his teeth. Mala Suerte was like a weird, annoying uncle, but Teo knew better than to risk insulting him.
"Are you enjoying your night?" Quetzal asked, taking over the conversation.
"Very much so," Mala Suerte said. "It's always nice to get quality time with the kids."
The kids consisted of a large group of semidioses following the god. Some were older, and what Teo guessed were their early 30s, the youngest a toddler in the arms of a teenage girl. They were a rambunctious group of about 10, but they moved so much, laughing, shoving, and teasing one another, that it was hard to keep track. There was one boy Teo recognized, however, who stood behind his dad, anxiously looking around the temple. Shio was 13, which Teo only knew because he'd recently attended Shio's gender confirmation ceremony.
"Danny and Renata are eligible this time, as is Shio," Mala Suerte said.
Shio seemed to hate being the center of attention, shifting awkwardly and wringing his hands. Mala Suerte placed his large hand on top of Shio's head. Unlike his siblings' sleek black hair, Shio had a curly mop that fell into his eyes.
"My little troublemaker,"
Mala Suerte said affectionately. Teo felt bad for Shio. He clearly didn't want to be here, and Teo could relate. Since the itching had faded, it was safe to finally speak. "Hey," he said, giving the younger boy a nod. Shio returned it with a tight-lipped smile, fidgeting with his father's eye glyph that hung around his neck on layered strings of teeth. Teo didn't want to know where they came from.
I suppose us jades are just here as a formality, Malasuerte said, scratching his stubble with black painted fingernails.
Not necessarily a bad thing, Quetzal said with a tired smile. Malasuerte flashed another toothy grin.
I would have to agree.
Sorry to interrupt. Everyone turned to see that Verdad had joined them. I'm writing a piece on the Lumbre twins, Verdad said, notebook and pen poised at the ready. She had short hair, longer on the top and always swept across her forehead, and a monotone voice that Teo found difficult to pay attention to. Teo, I was wondering if I could ask you a couple of questions about the fire in Quetzalan earlier today. There was literally nothing Teo would like to talk about less.
There was a fire, and they put it out,
he said in a not exactly friendly tone. A small crease formed between Verdad's eyebrows. She was dressed in a pinstripe suit that perfectly reflected her brand of no-nonsense investigative journalism. I've never been able to interview a semi-diose survivor of a rescue like this, she said, tapping her pen. I'd love to hear about what it was like to be saved by your peers.
They're not my peers.
Verdad glanced up. Why do you say that? It took concentrated effort to keep his tone even.
Ask the Academy.
Told you he'd be useless.
Chisme approached the group, high-heeled shoes clicking across the stone floor and his photographers not far behind. The only thing more alarming than being the focus of Chisme's attention was his plastic, red-tinted smile. Chisme and Verdad were the adult children of Diosa Comunión, and while they both served as Reino del Sol's leading journalists, they had very different approaches to their craft. Chisme was the tabloid mogul known for getting the inside scoop before anyone else, while Verdad preferred heavy-hitting reporting that focused on politics and current events. A bright flash burned Teo's eyes, making him flinch and throw his arms up in defense.
Don't waste the film, Chisme scolded before turning to Teo. How's about something more interesting? Do you think your friend Nia has what it takes to make it into the trials? Don't give this viper a soundbite, Malasuerte growled, his lip curling with distaste.
Teo smirked. He's just mad we ruined his outfit last summer.
My rare anaconda print suit, Chisme hissed. Listen, bird boy, it's Teo, he snapped. And don't you remember what it was like being a lowly jade close to a potential sunbearer? Or has no one ever wanted to get close to you?
Teo, his mom gasped, but Teo refused to be sorry.
So you agree? Chisme brought a small recorder close to his mouth. Teo, son of Quetzal, believes his closest friend, Nia, daughter of Tierra, is a likely sunbearer.
Verdad rolled her eyes at her brother, flipped her notebook closed, and strode away without a word to any of them.
At what point does journalism become harassment?
Malasuerte drawled. Chisme smiled serenely.
I haven't found out. He turned back to his photographers.
We can at least get a picture of all the jade rejects in a dark corner.
Quetzal managed a patient, if tired, smile. But poor Fantasma seized up entirely, her eyes growing wide as she stepped back into the shadows and disappeared.
I wouldn't recommend it, Malasuerte said, casually lifting an upturned palm. Shame if all of today's negatives were overexposed.
Chisme's mechanical grin twitched.
Fine. We have actual celebrities to interview anyway.
He turned on his heels and stalked away, the photographers scrambling after. Quetzal gave Teo's hand a quick squeeze. I'm going to say hello to some old friends. I'll see you at the ceremony. Teo nodded. Okay. As he watched his mom leave, he heard a metallic clatter, quickly followed by the shattering of what must have been a camera lens. Chisme's angry voice cut through the murmurings of the crowd.
Fool!
Deep chuckles rumbled in Malasuerte's chest. When Teo looked over, the god shrugged.
Whoops, he said, with a wicked grin.
This time, Teo couldn't help returning it.